Hey, college football fans. This podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to bring you college football's finest. The 2010 Rose Bowl game presented by Citi. This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com. It's Tuesday, December 22nd in the very cold and snowy Northeast. I guess it's December 22nd everywhere. And it certainly is in Pittsburgh, PA, where Beano Cook is. Beano, how are you?
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. You got big Christmas plans?
Not really. Just glad to make it to another Christmas.
Aren't we all? Yeah.
You're just happy to make it to Christmas. In fact, you're happy to make it day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. No guarantees. But yet another awkward segue. We guaranteed a great bowl season, Beano. How's that? That was really good.
Every bowl season's good. I mean, people complain that there are too many games and.
Not me.
You're probably right, but if it weren't for cable, you wouldn't see that many bowl games. Be grateful for cable.
Yes.
That's the reason we have all these games. And all these teams that don't get much attention, they're going to get attention with the bowl games. And they look, and the kids love it. Oh, this bowl, who cares? The kids who play care.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is... The traditional reason for bowl games is that they are a reward, and I think that gets lost in...
Well, it's completely lost.
Yeah, and I'm glad you pointed it out, because I think it does need to be. Certainly, they're not the BCS games, and they are not the games that everybody, is dying to see, but they're good bowl games, and they're good teams, because they had good seasons, so I think absolutely. I can't wait for a lot of them. And what you and I are going to talk about today is the best of the pre-January 1 bowls. And to me, one of the best is the one with Pittsburgh in it, the Meineke Car Care Bowl, Pittsburgh and North Carolina.
This is a much bigger game for Pitt than it is North Carolina. I mean, Pitt is 9-3. And if the three losses were scattered through the season, that would be one thing. But they were the last two games of the year. They lost to West Virginia in a field goal. They lost to Cincinnati in the last late of the game. And Cincinnati made the plays and came down the field and won. And they deserved to have won. Now, if Pitt loses this game to North Carolina, it's a 9-4 season. And when the last three games you lose... It's not a great season, and people remember the game last year in the Sun Bowl where Pitt lost to Oregon State 3-0 in a game that's never going to be on any DVD.
No.
But this is a much bigger game for Pitt than it is North Carolina.
Well, I don't say
it's a pressure game.
Well, I mean, Carolina 8-4, if they win, that's a nice season. But as you say, if Pittsburgh...
Yeah, the pressure's more on the Pitt coaching staff.
Yeah.
It's on the North Carolina coaching staff.
Well, if Pittsburgh wins, that 10, if you have 10 wins, I mean, that it's like a 20-game winner in baseball.
A 10-win
season seems to make a lot of difference. That game, Saturday, 4:30 Eastern on ESPN. That's Saturday, December 26th. What I like about the game is just that it's a good – physical defense with Carolina and a good physical offense with Pittsburgh, and just to see those two face off, I think will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be a good game.
Well, let's back up Christmas Eve. I love this game in Hawaii, SMU at Nevada or versus Nevada in Hawaii. The return of June Jones to Hawaii, where he was so successful for a decade or so. To me, what's fascinating about this game, Beano, the first time SMU has been in a bowl game since the death penalty in the late 80s.
Yeah, the death penalty really killed that program. I mean, people knew it would be tough to recover, but, boy, it took forever. And here to recover, and they got the right coach. This is a big game for SMU. I mean, it's a big game for Nevada, but this is a big step for SMU.
Well, it is, and I would make the case that SMU still hasn't recovered. I mean, they will never be what they were. I think it's tough when you're in Conference USA to get to that level. SMU was, in the early 80s anyway, a national power, and in a strong Southwest Conference that was nationally respected. And I think they're going to have trouble getting back. And I wonder, Bino, if the NCAA knew then what it knows now, whether they would have even instituted the death penalty.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, devastating. We knew it would be, but no idea. You're right. I don't think SMU can ever come back all the way. Never. But the only way, maybe, if they got into the Big 12 somehow, but they're not. So, I mean, SMU, this is a step up. And the other thing, Ivan, they're a private school. And again, as we've said many times, that they have no place to hide the kids that they can get in. The fringe kid, you might not have the grades, goes to a state university. They can hide him in a lot of courses to keep him eligible. Schools like SMU and Baylor, they don't have that. So I don't see how SMU could ever come back and compete with state universities. No way.
But, you know, and the fascinating thing to me is that they've been in the wilderness for two decades. They hire June Jones. They pay him a healthy salary. I remember reading $2 million a year. I don't know if that's true. And the irony there is that they went to their big donors for the money to pay June Jones a salary, and of course it was their big donors who got him in trouble 25 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but anyway, SMU came on strong the second half of the season. It's taken June Jones a little longer to work his magic in Dallas than it did at Hawaii, but he's done it. And, I think for that alone, that game will be worth watching. And, the other game I like, before we move further in the weekend, the game tonight, Oregon State and BYU in Las Vegas, 8:00 on ESPN, two really good passing games, two really good quarterbacks, Max Hall at BYU, Sean Canfield, the all Pac-10 quarterback at Oregon State. And I'll tell you something, I had a conversation with Chip Kelly a couple of weeks ago where, he sort of puckishly pointed out that Oregon only has one all Pac-10 player, which to me is amazing.
Is that correct?
Yes. And not only that, Ohio State only has one all Big Ten player. And those are the two Rose Bowl teams.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love that stat. But his point was, hey, if you look at the roster, he said, if you look at the All Pac-10 team, I can't really complain. He said, Sean Canfield is a really good quarterback. And he said, the running backs are Toby Gerhart from Stanford and Jaquiz Rogers from Oregon State. He said, I can't argue with that. So, but he did manage to point out in the conversation that with one All Pac-10 player, Oregon beat the rest of the league by two games. So,
he was going to point that out.
Well, and he's right. I mean, he's absolutely right. But anyway, the game tonight, I think, will be a great ball game. 8:00. I think it's one of the better the better games this week, at any rate. And I do want to point out, Bino, this is hot off the press from Jay Soderberg, our producer. Play ESPN College Bowl Mania for a chance to win $2,000 cash. All you have to do is pick the winners of the bowl games and rank them based on your confidence. Go to ESPN.com and search Bowl Mania to play for free. However, you've already missed three bowls, so you might be out of luck there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or, and he's got an and here, but I'm going to say or, install that ESPN Radio iPhone application. And when you do, you can listen to nearly a dozen college bowl games this season, including the Rose, the Outback, and the AutoZone Liberty. as well as almost 40 different podcasts. Download the ESPN Radio iPhone app right now, or at least when this podcast is over. Okay, Beano, promo's done. Emerald Bowl Saturday night in San Francisco, 8 o'clock on ESPN, the third game in a triple header that begins at 1 o'clock with the Little Caesars Bowl in Detroit, Marshall, and Ohio. Then we've talked about Pittsburgh and North Carolina. I love the Emerald Bowl, Boston College and USC, two very different 8-4 teams.
Absolutely. Intriguing. Very intriguing game. I don't know if they sold many tickets. I mean, they don't have large segments of alumni. But I presume USC has a lot of alumni in Northern California.
Well, the Emerald Bowl did announce a sellout Monday.
That's amazing.
Yes. Yes, so the good for them.
Yeah, that, oh, yeah, because they're not state universities with 8 million alumni.
No, no. You have to assume there are a lot of Trojans in the Bay Area. You know, I would say this. This, to me, is a real litmus test for USC. They've had a rough...
disastrous year for them.
Yeah, rough second half of the season, 8-4 overall, 5-4 in the Pac-10. They have every excuse not to play well. The three players who did not make their grades and are ineligible for the game Saturday night, including two starters. BC has been the overachieving, underappreciated team in the ACC all season, nearly pulled off their third straight division title. I think BC's got a really good chance to win this game, and I think it will say a lot about what sort of team USC is, you know, what sort of performance that they give us Saturday night.
See if they have any character.
Exactly, and it would be real easy to not play well.
They go to the big bowls all the time, and although San Francisco, if you have to go to another city, it isn't one of the major bowls. San Francisco isn't bad.
No.
I have a lot of money, especially if you're going to park somewhere.
Yes, it's like parking in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How much is... Now, did you drive to the Hall of Fame?
No, I took the train in, and I took the train in because last year I drove in, and I think I paid $66.
Where did you park?
I unfortunately parked in Midtown, so you only do that once.
Well, and you, what time of the day did you get there to park?
Oh, I think I got there.
Were you?
In the morning and was there all day. So
$6.
Yes.
Well, how did that go with the Billy Bean counters?
Well, it was cheaper for me to drive in, pay the parking, and turn around and go home than it was to, you know, $66, and driving home that night was cheaper than, you know, the $300 for the hotel room if I had not done that.
So that's how much you pay for a room. It's the size of a Bell telephone booth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hope everybody remembers what size telephone booths are.
They might be a dollar cheaper.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, all the, you know, Chicago's that way, San Francisco's that way. I had made a hotel reservation at the Emerald Bowl because if Stanford had been in it, I was going to go there on my way to the Rose Bowl. And I did see that parking at the hotel I picked was $49 a day. So
how much was the room?
The room was not bad because it was Christmas weekend, I guess. The room was under 200. It may have even been like 160.
Smell a bargain under 200.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in a major city, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. Let's move on to Tuesday. You know, a couple of interesting games on Tuesday. I wanted to point out Tuesday of next week, not today. The Champs Sports Bowl in Orlando, Miami, and Wisconsin, 2-9-3 teams.
Good game.
Well, yeah, I called it surf versus turf, and in a lot of ways they couldn't be more different. Miami with its athleticism and a very mobile quarterback in Ja'Cory Harris, Wisconsin with that bruising running game and a tank of a running back in John Clay.
I wonder if the Wisconsin fans will be there. I know Miami fans don't travel. They don't have that many because of the alumni. Do you think the Wisconsin fans will be there?
I think they will. I think there are a lot of snowbirds who will who are in Florida, and you know, who doesn't? If you're in Wisconsin, you know, who doesn't want to go to Orlando?
I think they have a good crowd. That's a good game.
No, it is.
You say, look, we're not trying to sell anything. We just believe these are good games. You don't have to have 1 versus 2 or 6 versus 8 to have a good game. These are interesting games. They're not going to decide the national title.
No.
BC, USC is intriguing. That's an intriguing game. Wisconsin and Miami is an interesting game. But you know, these are good games.
No,
you got a lot of balls, and some of the games aren't that great.
No, there's 34. You're not going to have 34 great games. But,
yeah.
You know, I think there are enough, especially as we, you know, get the engine revved up and get into next week, or get into this weekend, really, you know, beginning with Saturday.
Yes.
And there is a doubleheader next Tuesday, and before the Miami-Wisconsin game, which is an 8 o'clock game from Orlando, at 4:30 from RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C., the Eagle Bank Bowl. I love this game. 6-6 UCLA, 9-3 Temple. Two teams that never dreamt they would be in a bowl game, certainly playing each other.
Well, I don't think the UCLA fans will be traveling.
No, I don't know
about the Temple fans. I mean, I didn't realize it was in RFK Stadium.
Yes.
Until last week, or until you told me.
I figured
it was where the Redskins played.
Well, and I wasn't even sure RFK Stadium was still there.
Same here.
Yeah. But Temple,
I'll tell you what, if they have a big crowd, I said this before when I used to go to Redskin games when I worked for CBS at RFK. There was a college atmosphere because of the band. But I don't know if you're going to have much of a college atmosphere with Temple and UCLA. It's going to be very interesting, but if they're going to play the game, we're going to watch it.
Well, absolutely, and I think Temple, you know, Philly to Washington is very easy to do. You know, the trains run all the time, and you know, it's been centuries since Temple last played in a bowl game.
1979 against California.
Yeah, there you go.
And they won. Temple won.
Yes.
That, to me, one of the best coaching jobs in the country was Al Golden at Temple.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And one of the losses was to Penn State. Of course, one of the losses was to Villanova, but they just won their its division.
Yeah, they're national champions. So
It's pretty good. Al Golden, I can't understand why somebody isn't hiring him.
Well, I think he will get the job that he deserves. He'll get a big-ticket job. But
he should.
I like the fact that he's not leaping at the first athletic director to bat his eyes. You know, he's going to figure out the right job. And in the meantime, you know, he's built Temple, and people left Temple for dead. I mean, you talk about a death penalty.
Yes.
The Big East threw them out, and they found a home in the MAC. They've got a good team. They're 9-3, 7-1 in the MAC, almost won the division. And yet, I saw Al Golden at the Hall of Fame dinner. He thought they'd bring at least 10,000 people to Washington.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, I hope he's right.
I do too.
I hope he's right. You know, it would be great. I don't know how many UCLA graduates there are living and working on Capitol Hill and in Washington, but you'd have to hope they'd show up, or you know, or at least on the East Coast. And UCLA, you know, I think this year they made a lot of progress. This was a very good defense. They just were very thin on offense, and the wrong guys got hurt.
You expect them to really improve next year?
I think so. I think that Rick Neuheisel's too good of a coach, and he's got too good of a staff. He just needs some players, and they're recruiting pretty well, and now USC is vulnerable. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how recruiting goes.
Now, you still think USC's in trouble with the NCAA over Reggie Bush?
It's impossible to know, Bino. You know,
you're a good observer. Do you think they are? Hey, you can be wrong. You know, I mean, do you think they're still in trouble?
Yes, I do. As long as the case is open, I think it's open because the NCAA is not closing it, and there's a reason they're not closing it. You know, but they can't subpoena people, so they can't get the information that they think is out there. So they're just slowly work. I don't know what they're doing. Nobody knows what they're doing. So you got that. You know, now there's a dust up over Joe McKnight and the car he was driving. The explanation given by the man to whom the car is registered seems plausible, but we will have to wait and see how that unfolds. So those are some, not all, but those are some very good pre-New Year's Day games, and Bino and I will be back next week to talk about the games leading up to New Year's Day as well as the New Year's Day games and January 2nd, because we have bowls, I think, every day between now and the championship game, just about. Bino, let's do birthdays. And there was a very big one yesterday. Joe Paterno turned 83 years old.
Unbelievable.
Yes, coming off yet another very good season.
Unbelievable. 83. Unbelievable.
Second straight 10-win season, or at least 10
wins. They had him buried a couple of years ago. I think next year will kind of be a rough year for him. They go to Ohio State. They go to Alabama.
They go to Iowa.
But the following year, Alabama comes there and Michigan goes off the schedule. You know, because Michigan eventually is going to return to par. Michigan won't be on there in 2011, 2012. So I think Joe's realistic about next year. But the following year, they could be pretty good. They got to come up with a quarterback.
Yes.
But he will have a year of seasoning this year, and they get Ohio's 2 years from now. They have Ohio State at home, and they will have Alabama at home, and that'd be the only tough non-conference game. They play in Indiana State, I believe, in 2011, but luckily for Penn State, Larry Bird won't be playing.
Well, they open next season with Youngstown State before they go to Tuscaloosa.
But Penn State with Paterno.
Well, I did the numbers. Once Bobby Bowden retires, the second place among active coaches in victories is Frank Beamer with 228.
Yeah.
Which puts him 165 behind Joe.
Yeah.
And Frank
Paterno would hit with seven wins next year. He might win the bowl game.
Yes.
But he could hit, let's say they lose to LSU. Seven wins next year would hit him at 400. That's never going to be done.
Well, here's the math I did. I looked up Urban Meyer. He's 45 years old, Bino. He has 95 victories, which means that if he averages 8 wins a year until he turns 83, he'll have 399 wins.
Urban Meyer won't be coaching 15 years from now.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I've said this before, on this show, that somebody asked him about that last year before the championship game, if he could envision himself coaching when he was 82, which Joe was at the time. And the look on Meyer's face was of genuine horror. It was like, there's no way.
Especially in that league.
Especially in that league. So, Joe's birthday, happy birthday, 83 years old, to Joe Paterno. Tomorrow, December 23rd, a pair of prominent Notre Dame Hall of Famers, Dan Devine, the former coach, national championship in 1977, and Paul Hornung, the 1956 Heisman winner.
Paul Hornung, quite a guy. One of the great guys of all time. And Dan Devine went there. He went there from coaching Green Bay, and he coached there from 1975 through 1980, six seasons, won a national title, and was in the running in 1980 until USC beat him out there. So Dan Devine did a great job at Arizona State.
Paul Hornung grew up in Louisville.
Correct.
And Bear Bryant was the coach at Kentucky at the time.
They tried to recruit him, but in my interview with him on the Heisman Trophy series a number of years ago, he wanted to go to Kentucky. His mother said, "You can go to any college you want as long as it's Notre Dame." And his mother had a strong influence on him. And it was Notre Dame. I mean, he would have gone to Kentucky.
Wow.
If it weren't for his mother. But he went to Notre Dame, and it's like, you know, we know the rest. He, Johnny Ladner tells a great story. Frank Lee called him aside, and Ladner was a senior, and he said, we got this Paul Hornung from Louisville coming, and he's something special. Would you show him around? Ladner said he knew where the spots were. I didn't even know they existed. So he told me, so I never worried about Paul Hornung after that. Well, he knew he had something special with Hornung. And in 1955, when they beat Iowa, touchdown, he kicked a field goal. I don't know which came first, but they were losing 14-7, I believe, and they won 17-14. He was carried. They carried him off the field.
Wow.
And Terry Brennan said that was done fairly seldom at Notre Dame. And if I recall, he said, I don't remember when it was done before. Hornung was something. You know, I asked him that, you know, one of the famous landmarks at Notre Dame is the fire escape by Hornung's room.
Oh, really?
That's where he used to sneak out, go down the fire escape. I mean, that's that's one of the landmarks.
They should put a plaque up.
Hornung I knew well.
Yeah.
And what an absolutely unbelievable guy. Funny. You know, he just good sense of humor. You know, awful smart. And I think the way the university treated him by taking him off the games was an absolute disgrace. And it never would have happened with Father Hesburgh or Father and Father Joyce were still running the university. They took him off the broadcast. Absolutely disgraceful on Notre Dame's part. I had to get that in.
Yeah, I don't remember. Why did they take him off? There was something that happened.
You know, he said something. I forget.
Okay.
It was about who, I believe, who should be admitted and who should not be.
Oh, okay.
I think that was it.
Okay. Well, Beano, I want to get to the email, and we do have one more topic we're going to touch on, but the email will kind of play
into. You got it. Tom Hamilton, 26, right?
December 26th, that's absolutely right. Tom Hamilton,
he was my first boss. Make it real quick.
Sure.
He was the one who said, a tie is like kissing your sister. Just want to remind people. Okay, email.
Yeah. Now, he played for Navy in the 20s, and then he became, he was a coach of the great, the Navy teams in the late 40s, is that correct?
Coach, he was the coach in 46 in the Army. He graduated in 27. Navy won the mythical national championship, in 1926. They played Army, if I recall, in Chicago before something like 100,000 fans. If we're wrong, we get an email on it. But I am almost sure of that. He was coach of the 34 team that beat Army 7-3-0 on a field goal by Slade Carter, who eventually became the athletic director, and that was the first game Navy had won against Army for a few years, and then he coached them, and the reason he left Navy was he didn't want to play Maryland. He thought it was, you know, he told me this personally, what was going on in Maryland, he just didn't like what was going on, but when he went out of town, the Pentagon canceled a game with Washington and scheduled Maryland, and when he came back, he decided if the right offer came along, he was going to leave. And he left and became athletic director at Pitt. Also, he was under tremendous pressure to break the relationship off with Notre Dame. And the Pentagon was on him to do it, and he said no, and they didn't. And thank God he stood by his guts. Tom Hamilton, I don't always agree with him, but he stood behind what he thought and felt. I had to get that.
No, I'm glad you did.
I mean, I mentioned that before, but he was my first boss, and he used to chew me out. You could make 20 mistakes, but don't make the same mistake twice. He saw combat in World War II, a lot of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I do want to get to a couple emails because we've touched on some of these topics over the course of the podcast. This is, and speaking of what we were just talking about, this is from Nick Fotis in Chicago. He said he really enjoys the podcast and he never misses a podcast with Beano. He said, my question is around the pre-1940 knowledge that you and Beano share. Even Beano wouldn't have been old enough to remember much before 1940, but frequently both of you are able to recall exact scores of games from this era. Did you take an interest in college football history at an early age, or does this knowledge come from research that you've acquired through your profession?
I think just acquired.
Yeah.
You had a lot more going for you in learning. Well, I just had radio and the newspapers, and I just, you know, liked it. I liked it, and
exactly.
Then as I grew older, I did, you know, I found out about what happened in other parts of the country and, you know, read some books, and that's just acquired it and tried to learn and remember college football. I mean, the thing about college football, what happened back in the 30s is important to a lot of teams that play each other all the time, the rivalry games.
Sure.
Yeah, certain things happened 40, 50 years ago, but because of the rivalry, they're remembered. And that's, I think I love the rivalries more than anything else and the tradition, the bands and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, it never seemed like I was studying it or having to learn it. It was just fun to know it. And it's still the same way. Now we got a email from a loyal listener, Greg Altig in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And Greg has written before, and he wanted me, he's correcting my geography.
Ivan and Beano, you're wrong.
This one was me, not Beano. He said, when we were talking last week about the speed of the SEC, Pac-10, and Big 12 defenses compared to the Big 10 because of the recruiting hotbeds of Florida, says you, meaning me, also mentioned the big lineman coming out of the Pacific Islands and mentioned Ndamukong Suh. And for the record, his parents are from Cameroon, which at last, according to Rand McNally, is in West Africa, not in the Pacific. So I did check the map, and it is still in Africa, not in the Pacific.
Yes.
So thank you, Greg, and thank you for continuing to listen to us on the other side of the world. Matthew Green from Oxford, Ohio, wrote about the comments that the books we discussed. The college football books, and we brought up Dan Jenkins, and he was surprised that we did not mention the book that his daughter Sally wrote, The Real All-Americans, which was about Jim Thorpe and the Carlisle Indians.
Yes.
Yes, and said he had thoroughly enjoyed it, so I would read a menu if Sally wrote it.
The thing about Sally, that book, I learned things I had no idea.
Yeah.
No idea. I mean, Pop Warner was the first coach to put the backs outside the tackles. Sally Jenkins. Danny had three kids, Sally and then twins.
Sally, one of the boys was a twin of Sally's.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, Sally. Was Sally one of the twins?
Yes.
Okay. The twin has no interest in college in sports. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, the boys are interested in sports, but they're not.
Yeah, not like Sally.
Eating up with it. Sally's got it like Dan.
One of the twins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy.
Yeah. So, she's a very good friend and
went to Stanford with you.
Yes, she did and was at the Hall of Fame dinner a couple of weeks ago when Dan was honored.
Yes.
By the National Football Foundation for his contributions to the sport, which we can all wholeheartedly agree on. The other topic we wanted to get into, we discussed last week, Beano, the possibility of the Big Ten expanding.
Oh, I thought you were going to forget that. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah. You think you've got it figured out.
Well, I think, if they ask Missouri, Missouri would come. And then you and I figured out the divisions. It would be Missouri, Iowa, Penn State, Ohio State, that's for Illinois, and Indiana. And the cross opponents, they would do it the way the Southeast Conference does. Ohio State would play, the team from the other division you would play every year would be Ohio State, would naturally play Michigan.
Right.
Penn State would play Michigan State. Illinois would play Northwestern. That's a good rivalry. I mean, that's a big game for those two schools. It used to be.
Yeah.
Still play at the end of the year most of the time. Purdue would play Indiana. Iowa.
Play Minnesota or Wisconsin, I guess.
Missouri would play the other.
Yeah.
I had Iowa and Minnesota and Missouri playing Wisconsin. That's the way I had it.
Now, okay, if Missouri leads the Big 12, who do you put in the Big 12?
TCU in that division, unless somebody else wants to go in from the South.
Yes.
I think TCU is the logical replacement. I think they can compete because they're in Texas. I mean, Texas will still get better players most years than Oklahoma, but they will be able to compete with Texas Tech and Baylor and Texas A&M, the teams they would play every year. And every so often, they would pull the upset. Baylor got in the Big 12 because of politics. I presume that's who they would get. I don't know who else they could go after unless they, wanted to expand way out and try to get Utah. But again, I think it would be TCU. They would go to the Northern Division. That's not a big thing. You can fly anywhere in this country and get there in 10 minutes.
Yes.
It isn't as if it were years ago and you went by train. And that's what I think. But I think if Missouri was asked, Missouri would go. And Missouri has more in common with the Big Ten schools than they do with the Big 12. That's my opinion.
Well, my only question about TCU would be it doesn't bring anything to the Big 12 that they don't already have in terms of a footprint. They don't add television viewers. They're not replacing the viewers that they lose from Missouri.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so
they want to have a championship game.
Right. Oh, sure, they would get somebody, but I think I would think it would be more like a.
It would take Stevens College, the women's college in Columbia.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
They want that. I mean, that's just that's what I think. Now, that doesn't mean Missouri's definitely going to go. I'm just saying, I think if they're asked, they're going to know the answer. In other words, the Big Ten.
Oh, sure.
They're going to know the answer. They're not going to make that mistake and go after Notre Dame again. Notre Dame's already said no, and Paterno has said, forget Notre Dame. They had their chance. That's just, as much as Joe has a lot to say, if Notre Dame called up tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Paterno or no Paterno.
Yeah,
things going to happen.
Yes, I agree.
What do you think?
What do I think is going to happen?
Big Ten.
I still think the Big Ten is going to come east, and I don't know.
Rutgers adds nothing. Look, Rutgers does not. Nobody in New York City cares about Rutgers.
No. See, I would think.
Joke.
I think New York. I still think Syracuse is attractive and would get you some of New York.
Yes.
And you get tradition, you get. Very good program in basketball.
Yeah, but that would go right downhill. I'm going to go to Syracuse to play in the Big Ten. They go there to play in the Big East.
In the Big East, yeah. No, you're right. It'd be an interesting call. It'd be a good problem for Syracuse to have.
Yeah.
I think it would benefit their football. I don't think the football is that far away. I think Doug Marrone is going to turn things around there. The first-year head coach, they went 4-8 this year. I still think it makes, from a business standpoint, it makes more sense for them to come east, but we will see. In the meantime, Beano, even though it's Christmas week, even though it's the end of the year.
We fooled them and even on Christmas.
Yes.
Christmas week.
It's probably not nice to fool people Christmas week, but we did it. We will be back next week with before New Year's.
On Tuesday.
Yes, we're going to we will have a new podcast next Tuesday. But in the meantime, I want everybody to hope everybody has a good holiday. You too, Beano, and we will talk soon.
Okay.
All right. This has been the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com. Hey, college football fans, this podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to present the 2010 Citi BCS National Championship Game.